disassembling the lies and reassembling the truth. This is the Jason Burma Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
And we are live. Let's talk about a thing I hear all the time, which in essence to me is really a know-nothing, say-nothing phrase. And I hear it from establishment politicians all the time. I heard it from the former Prime Minister of Great Britain just yesterday. And that is peace through strength. Now, on its surface, it sounds very good, right? Well, we're going to have a strong military and a strong defense, and that is going to bring us peace. But when you just scratch the surface a little itty bitty bit, what do they say? They say things like, we've got to give Ukraine the weapons they need to do the job. That would be impossible because there are no amount of weapon systems we can give Ukraine to end the conflict in Russia. Period. Full stop. I'm in a place called reality. So that is not an answer. That is an establishment moment that lets me know they're riding the flow of whatever will keep them in office, keep them on television, and keep them in power, despite them talking about being revolutionary. Let's talk about some other blind spots. I had a gentleman on today. He's wrote several books on fake news in regards to Trump. Talked to this guy. I think he's a very smart guy. Had 10, 15 minutes in the green room behind the scenes with him waiting on my producer. There's a lot of human things that we can agree on. In fact, we can even agree on the first Trump administration being filled with totally awful people within the Republican Party. Mike Pompeo was named, Bill Barr, John Bolton, Mattis, all not good people. All people that I've seen time and time and time again on establishment media networks lying to either keep us in global conflicts that kill hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions of people, or begin to escalate those situations otherwise. So I'm talking to this gentleman. And again, seems like a pretty bright guy. And all of a sudden, he brings up the Reagan administration. And for some reason, the generation before mine has some kind of a love affair with Ronald Reagan. Now look, Ronnie was in office while I was little tyke baby B. You know, from the time, you know, I can remember, Reagan was the president. And I remember just like this old guy. I didn't think he was that impressive. I remember there were conflicts. I remember Noriega before I even knew what that was. And I remember the tone around Noriega. I remember specifically being a little kid sitting there and a news piece came on and my dad was like, yeah, go get him. Get that bastard drug dealer. Well, I grow up. I don't even have to grow up that much. And Iran-Contra's already happened. It comes out Noriega was a CIA asset. I start learning about the underbelly of not only the Central Intelligence Agency, but the vice president at the time, George Herbert Walker Bush. And I don't think they're great people. This guy, they're the best thing since peanut butter and jelly. I mean, he actually brought up the fact that Bush walked off an interview with Dan Rather. Now, that's something I didn't have in my noggin or my memory piece, but I can only imagine how even milquetoast those questions were as Dan Rather progressively became more and more and more of an establishment hack to the shell of his former self that we see today on social media. This guy was a guy that was questioning the war on terror, then stopped doing this. This was a guy that noticed on 9/11 that buildings don't just magically come down symmetrically in their own footprint and said, you know what? This is reminiscent of those times that we've seen controlled demolitions on television. but he was mistaken about that. And that shows the integrity of somebody's character, whether or not they are going to espouse the truth they see right in front of their eyes, even though it's difficult. No, it's not difficult. Following us on social media, it's so easy. You go over to the X, the Facebook, the Instagram, Getter Gab, you name it, your preferred source of social media. You give us a follow. You've got real news coming in 24/7, 365. You're reposting. You're even cutting up our clips and sharing them with others. It helps so much. You know what else helps? Donations to keep independent media like today's news talk thriving. We're going to cut out. We're going to come back with Adam Ruckus in a moment.
Clashing on the controversies.
It's a woke society, and I am fed up with it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Google has officially admitted, announced, that all Android devices can quickly and easily be located. Oh, joy. Even if they're offline, and in some cases, even if they are powered off or the battery is completely dead. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT News producer Adam Clark, bringing the ruckus. Thank you, sir. Let's hear it about this new awesome Android feature.
Thanks, Jason. Yeah, I think my favorite part is that last part there where in some cases, even if the device is completely powered off and the battery is dead, you can't even use the phone. But don't worry, somebody can. I wonder who. I consider this more of an admission than them saying, hey, look, people, we got a brand new feature. No, you've had this feature all along. Don't you? You're not kidding anybody. Anyways, regardless, Google announced this new release just yesterday while everybody was distracted with the end of the world. The eclipse on April 8th on its Android blog, which I do not subscribe to, and I probably never will. They said that their all new, quote unquote, Find My Device app happily is already available to, and I probably never will. They said that their all new, quote unquote, Find My Device app happily is already available to all of you fine users in the United States of America and Canada. Ah, and the rest of the world, don't worry, yours is coming soon. A global release is set for some undetermined time later in the near future. With this brand new, enhanced app, Android users can locate their phones and tablets, even if they're offline, by ringing them or viewing their location on a map in the app. That's right, the app map. Previously, Android owners were unable to use this service unless their phones were connected to the internet, which kind of only makes sense until you learn how the world really works. Additionally, here's where it gets fun. Thanks to quote-unquote specialized Pixel hardware, the feature will allow Pixel 8 and Pixel 8 Pro users to find their devices even if they're powered off or if the battery is dead. This, according to straight out of the horse's mouth, that's what Google says. The Find My Device app uses a crowdsourced network of over a billion, with a B, devices to locate phones and other compatible devices. The new feature only works with devices running Android 9 or later operating systems. So if you didn't update, there's a good chance you're probably, they can still find your phone. It just means you can't find it on the app. Anyway, Google's latest upgrade to the service means it is now similar to Apple's Find My app, a crowdsourced network of millions of Apple devices that use Bluetooth wireless technology to detect missing devices or other items nearby. I think I see what's going on here. The company also said that starting in May, the feature will make everyday items like keys and wallets with a Bluetooth tracking tab from Chipolo and Peeblebee findable. That's right. I don't even know what those things are. It added that more compatible tags from companies like Motorola, Jio, and EUFY, that will also be made available later this year. These are all like near field technology, Bluetooth. You can slap a tag on something and then find it, basically. Google also noted that their network will start to work with headphones from competitors like JBL, Sony, and other brands, quote unquote, soon. Huh, interesting. The Alphabet-owned search giant, that's Google, in case you didn't know, they're owned by Alphabet, said, quote, these tags, built specifically for the Find My Device network will be compatible with unknown tracker alerts across Android and iOS to help protect you from unwanted tracking, end quote. Bluetooth tracking tags, or Apple's AirTags, are intended to be slipped into or attached to keys, wallets, backpacks, and other items so people can find them when they're lost. Since its launch, however, law enforcement officials have said some people used the tiny gadgets for criminal or malicious purposes, you don't say, including tracking cars for a planned theft. I'm sure there's probably other things. To boost their security, Apple and Google teamed up in 2023 amid reports of stalking or unwanted tracking through AirTags and similar tools. Both the big tech companies have since changed how they work, making it harder for criminals to use these tracking devices for malicious purposes or criminal activities. Nowhere in the reporting, Jason, does it say it's going to make it any more harder for the government to do that. So now the Android users will themselves be able to track things, and they will also be automatically notified when an unknown Bluetooth tracking device is following them, a sign that could point to the possibility that someone is stalking them using an AirTag or a similar tracking tool. Boy, I can't wait till this technology plays out during the next pandemic with contact tracing, but maybe I'm jumping too far ahead here, Jason. What do you think?
So smart tagging has been around a very long time, and the idea that you're not going to update your Android phone, I hate to tell you, it sounds like you're an iPhone guy there, Andrew. We're at Android 14. So if you haven't bought a new device maybe in the last 4 or 5 years or updated in that time period, maybe you're running Android 9 or beyond, or maybe you just have like a cheap tablet. They put Android on those. Sometimes they only go to about 4 or 5. It's like the discount one you see at the 5 and a below store that now has $20 items, but we'll get into kind of that stuff later on. Look, the idea that these devices haven't been track trace database for a very long time is laughable. I got for my niece on Christmas, I don't like buying retail, okay? I can't spend $300 on a pair of AirBuds that are about the equivalent of $25 decent technology on another brand. However, my nieces are picky. It's got to be Apple, Apple, Apple. I hit the thrift stores. I hit the pawn shops. I found quite the deal on these headsets. And while she was selling them to me, she said, hey, just so you know, the reason that they're so low is that they are currently still paired to another person's find feature. And I said to them, all right, well, what does that exactly mean? Can I still pair these to my niece's phones or other devices? And they said, yes, of course you can. But if they wanted to find them, they could. You understand? So it was never detagged. Now, I don't expect somebody who sold a pair of earbuds to a pawn shop to all of a sudden be looking for them, especially because I think they'd been on the shelf for about 3+ months and were paired on. So in other words, if it was stolen from somebody and they were going to use that technology, they would have showed up long ago. But it does give you that eerie feeling that somebody else has access to someone else's location and they don't even know who that person is. Now, roll that back. That's not just an individual, that's any company that is distributing these devices. And you also noticed, I brought up the AirPods because you talked about JBL and other competitors. Well, JBL makes what? Headphones, speakers, etc. So now you have this near field technology and this Bluetooth kind of GPS substitute being put into these devices as well. And I can go all the way back to my Infowars.com days when we were reporting on certain GPS devices not being used to steal cars. But for instance, if you thought maybe your significant other was cheating on you, some people would put them above a tire, find that out, find the address they were going to, and then lo and behold, maybe find some hanky-panky going on. So there's a multitude of things that these tracking devices have been utilized for. But really, when you look at the literature, Adam, the goal is to put these devices in just about anything. And that's from the tag on the back of your Hanes t-shirt to the cup of coffee you bought at the Quick Stop. And that's just the reality of situations. They want to make these extremely abundant, extremely cheap, and like you said, part of our everyday lives. So if we need some kind of a boopity boppity passport or whatever, it will be inbuilt to almost anything we have on us. What say you, good sir?
Yep, it looks like when you look at all of these puzzle pieces, the puzzle that you see is they're not tracking these items, they're tracking you. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you, and we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got the man, the myth, the legend, Stuart J. Hooper on. We're going to be talking about a vast array of geopolitical issues, including what's going on in the Middle East and, of course, via Ukraine and Russia. Stay tuned for more TNT Radio after this.
TNT's James Freeman.
The Biden administration is planning to use Florida as a leading processing site for more than 320,000 illegal migrants that the administration is flying into the country. Yes, this apparently is all about solving the problem at the southern border, as Biden's solution to the problem is to fly illegals directly into the country on direct flights. Yes, that's right. In order to reduce pressure at the border, the Biden administration is going to fly illegal migrants into America, and the plan is to send more than 320,000 of them to Florida for processing.
James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Joining us now is one of my favorite guests. He is an academic and political analyst. He is Stuart J. Hooper, and we are going to get the skinny on what is going on around the world. Now, Stuart, just yesterday, via this conflict with Ukraine and Russia, we had a drone strike on a nuclear facility. Now, in the past, we have been discussing the possibility of this conflict somehow, some way, escalating to the nuclear level. Obviously, that's not what we saw here, but what we did see was an escalation of utilizing the technology of autonomous drones that I've been emphasizing during this conflict to possibly poke that bear in that direction of a nuclear conflict by what not only targeting a power plant that's obviously utilized by their civilian population, but what also a nuclear power plant. So again, thank you for joining us. And what is your take on this?
Well, thanks so much, Jason. Great to be here. Really appreciate the invite as always. And great to be on with you. What's going on in Ukraine right now is bordering once again on nuclear disaster. Like you have said before, we've discussed this many times over the past over 2 years now that this conflict has been going on various platforms together. We've been talking about this and the dangers that exist. Now here, as you mentioned, we're not talking about necessarily a nuclear attack, but a nuclear accident, which is perhaps no less dangerous in a lot of ways. Sure, you may not have the blast wave that you get from a nuclear explosion, but the radioactive damage that could be evident in a situation like this could be truly devastating. Of course, we only need look to Chernobyl for a prime example of what can happen when a nuclear plant goes awry. Now, as you said, this plant is under the control of the Russians, which is an important point in this whole story. Because would the Russians want to attack a nuclear plant that they are currently controlling? Probably not. But Ukraine apparently seems like he has no problem with launching drone attacks on a nuclear power plant. Now, you have to really question the logic in all of this. If you go ahead and attack a nuclear power plant, well, what good is that territory going to be if you do one day manage to get it back? Let's say there is a miracle, pigs do fly, Ukraine wins the war, they get this territory back, but now they've gotten back a radioactive wasteland. Well, what have you really achieved here? What has been accomplished? Absolutely nothing. So we're in a situation where we're on a knife's edge, as always with this, and looking down the barrel of a nuclear disaster.
So let's talk about that, because you just kind of alluded to this not really being a winnable war. Pigs aren't flying anytime soon, and nobody out there is going to be eating snow cones in hell, as far as I know. If that happens somehow, some way, maybe. But right now, I still hear this mantra. I talked about it in my monologue of establishment politicians on both sides saying the United States just needs to give Ukraine the weapons and the funding to finally win the war. Can you explain why that is not a reality? Because we can give them all of the technology in the world, unless we're willing to pull out the big boys. It's been proven that Russia has either the same or similar technology, or even possibly better. Correct, Stuart?
Yeah, exactly. So we're looking here at a symmetrical conflict in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria. They were asymmetrical conflicts in the sense that one side and its capabilities dramatically outweighed the other side so much that it was a foregone conclusion who was going to win. In Ukraine, you have a symmetrical conflict for the most part, where both sides have similar weapon systems, similar capabilities, and they're crashing together and not really moving anywhere. This is the result of modern war, and we found this out decades and decades and decades ago in World War One and then World War Two. If you want to overcome this, that can be done. How do you do it? You throw millions and millions of people into what becomes a meat grinder, and you push those front lines forward slowly but surely, but yes, they will move. Well, now, who is going to do that? There have been all sorts of stories about people in Ukraine being recruited or forced into this war effort at this point. Elderly men, younger boys, people with disabilities even. There's some video floating around on X that I've seen. I'm not sure if that's real or not. You may have seen that. Point being, Ukraine does not have the population to sustain a conflict of this magnitude versus a state like Russia, which does have the men that it ultimately needs to funnel into this for as long as they need to be funneled into it. Now, if the US wants to send some more money into this conflict, some more tanks, some jets, whatever it is, it can go ahead and do that. It's not going to make a qualitative difference on the battlefield. It's not going to be this magic bullet that remedies everything. There is no panacea here to solve this conflict. I actually wrote a piece probably about a year ago, maybe over a year ago, that was entitled something like Exquisite Weapons Are No Panacea for Ukraine, because they're not. They're not an instant solution. That's not what they're going to be. The only thing that funneling more money into this conflict is going to do for anyone is be a nice shot in the arm to the military-industrial complex, which doesn't really need a shot in the arm because it's already at $870+ billion that the US government funnels into the military-industrial complex this year alone.
Now, you talked about the meat grinder aspect, and I have seen some of the videos floating around of younger boys. I mean, they don't look older than 14 or 15 on a bus to what I think is their certain death, which is extremely disturbing. You also alluded to the fact of forced conscription and basically people being rounded up and forced into the military. I've also now been reading stories on the peripheral of an upswing of men in Ukraine trying to marry disabled women because this will keep them out of the military. So Do you think that support within that country, however great it used to be, is also waning, seeing the death and destruction surrounding them?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that one way or the other, but it's certainly possible. There are polls that show that the Russian population is still very much in favor of this. In Ukraine, I haven't seen any numbers, so I couldn't cite anything off the top of my head. But it's certainly a possibility that the longer this drags on, the worse it gets for Ukrainians, the less likely they are to support this. This is a usual phenomenon that we see with wars around the world post 9/11. George W. Bush gets a massive uptick in approval ratings. The country's under attack. What do the people want? The president to do something. We're going to give him our full support. 87%+ approval ratings in many polls for George W. Bush post 9/11. That does not last long. So you get this popularity boost for a while, then it slowly trickles away and people start to question what you're doing, what your true motives are. And when those questions start to be asked, well, that's when the elites can find themselves in trouble.
But at the same time, the military-industrial complex continues to make a big buck a roo. And again, if you look at the WikiLeaks documents, these forever wars were really something the establishment wanted for power and profit. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back with Stuart J. Hooper. We're going to shift to another part of the world. This is my show. I am Jason Burmis, back with more TNT Radio Live after this.
TNT.
Here's what's making news.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has declared that Israel will proceed with a military operation in Rafah, Gaza, regardless of international concerns over potential civilian casualties. EU lawmakers have agreed to extend Ukraine's duty-free access to the EU market until June of 2025, with conditions. Germany has deployed an advanced military team to Lithuania, marking the first step in establishing a full-strength armor brigade permanently based in the Baltic state, which shares a border with Russia.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
And we are back with Stuart J. Hooper. Stuart, we were just talking about Ukraine, Russia. You mentioned symmetrical warfare. You also talked about how Syria, et cetera, was asymmetrical because they don't have the military that we do. But at the same time, you know, Russia has backed Syria in a lot of these conflicts. That could be a powder keg. And just recently, we had yet another military strike in that region via our Iranian enemy. So the real question is, with that asymmetric warfare that's still going on in the Middle East, in Iraq to some extent, in Afghanistan to some extent, Syria, you know, you mentioned Libya, AFRICOM still going on. What is the likelihood of one of these smaller incidents that are seem like a flash in the pan in the news, right? We're not even really talking about that strike anymore, escalating this war further and maybe even overlapping with what's going on in Israel and Palestine.
So this was really the huge story of last week, this attack on an Iranian embassy in Syria. But it wasn't really that simple. And I put out a video where I was explaining this. Israel used American jets to drop American bombs on an Iranian embassy in Syria, a country that's been backed by Russia, a country that's backed by China, meaning when you add up all of these dominoes and you put them in a line and you start to flick them over, they start to head in a direction that doesn't really look too promising. Now, people may think that this is an outlandish proposal, that this could lead to World War III. Well, keep pushing things. Keep testing the waters and see where you end up, because eventually there will be a crack in the dam, so to speak, and the flood is going to come in and no one's going to be ready for it, because nobody ever is ready for a conflict of this magnitude when it breaks out. World War I, World War II, again, you could kind of see where it was going. Then when it eventually tips over, it's an immediate disaster of unparalleled magnitude. World War II, for instance, just briefly, the Germans, they crashed through the entirety of Western Europe in an extremely short period of time. They thought it was going to take them the best part of a year, only takes them a few months. So you're not ready for this when this happens. So you do not want this to happen. That has to be point number one. Now, why is this so disastrous? Well, on a lot of levels, this is truly unprecedented. They destroyed an embassy. What is an embassy? A diplomatic outpost, meaning a place where you're supposed to do politics, where you're supposed to talk to the other side to work out your problems, represent your interests, hear the other side's interests, talk, figure it out, not blow one another up. So the attack on that embassy is really unprecedented on that level. And Iran has now come out and said, no Israeli embassy in the world is safe. Well, here we go. Good luck trying to get a visa if you're an Israeli citizen somewhere around the world. I would not want to go into an Israeli embassy anywhere because you don't know how they're going to respond to this. This is also the problem. Even if it doesn't tick over into a massive regional or global escalation, the Iranians now have somewhat of an ace up their sleeve in that they can unleash an attack somewhere, either officially or through a proxy, and there's probably not going to be too much the Israelis can do about it. Also, what this strike demonstrated to me was that Israel absolutely has very, very, very good precision munitions that it can use to hit a very small target on a very limited scale, kill exactly who they want to kill, and then leave the zone of operations. Why have they not been doing that in Gaza for 6 months? So every time that they do something like this, they open themselves up to this type of criticism as well. So the idea that militarism, escalation in any form is going to get us out of this, you're on completely the wrong ship. You're heading in the wrong direction. You're heading towards disaster.
So let's talk about that, because you just talked about Israel and embassies and the possibility of attacks really anywhere in the world where those embassies exist. But then prior to that, you mentioned the fact that the embassy bombing was really with what? United States military equipment. Now, I think in a lot of instances, Iran knows that every time they have come into conflict with us or maybe gone a little too far, obviously a Soleimani situation can occur. So I think that they've been pretty reserved. At the same time, doesn't this open up the possibility for Iran to go after American embassies that are also around the world? And if that is the case, if we saw something like that, that's the equivalent of a terrorist style attack and will be framed as such by the Western media. Is that enough to escalate this situation to not only global warfare with Iran, but maybe that is the powder keg moment we see for a World War III?
Yeah, absolutely. There are Americans right now in Syria, in the country that Israel just bombed and conducted this strike on this Iranian embassy. There are American bases there. There are American bases throughout the region that are well within the range of Iranian capabilities, of Yemeni Houthi capabilities as well. So the Iranians, they're going to be sitting down right now and thinking, how do we respond to this? Because it's also put them in a strenuous position as well. Iran doesn't necessarily want all of this to go in this direction. But you have to think from the perspective of an Iranian elite. If you're the Iranian president, one of the mullahs, if you are an Iranian elite, you are trying to maintain domestic political power. Well, how do you do that? You have to be presentable and well-liked and seen as powerful by your domestic population. So they are being forced to respond. Israel is pushing their hand. How they choose to do this is, again, where the chips may fall. They're going to go in perhaps a tremendously dangerous direction. Because even if, let's say, the Iranian government does not officially respond to this, some Shia militia group completely outside of Iranian control, these exist, they're just generally ideologically supportive of Iran. What if they go and blow up an American embassy or an American airbase, or try to drive a truck through a checkpoint somewhere and blow up a base? All of that's possible. So then you have a non-state entity attacking an American base, and who's going to be blamed? Iran. So the dominoes have been set up here for Iran to essentially fall into a trap. The greater that it responds to this, the greater the response that it has, the more likelihood that you're going to get an Israeli or an American or a jointly Western attack on Iran itself. So they're setting Iran up for a tremendously dangerous game that's being played out here. This does not look good for Iran. I'm certainly no fan of Iran or the Iranian government, but I'm definitely a fan of state sovereignty and the idea that countries get to choose their own future and it shouldn't be decided for them. And this was a clear violation of the sovereignty of Iran, which, again, this was the whole point of embassies, diplomatic outposts. This is a piece of Iranian territory in this foreign country. We have control over this, and Israel's just violated all of that. Look what's also just happened in Ecuador. Ecuador has just stormed a Mexican embassy. So slowly but surely, we are throwing all of the norms of international relations straight out the door, and more countries are doing this. Where is this going to lead us? Probably nowhere good.
Absolutely not. And, you know, you mentioned Israel and these precision strikes. We've got to take a break. But when we come back, I want to discuss AI Lavender and the reports that this program targeted, I believe, 37,000 individuals that they named Hamas and indiscriminately began a campaign that was followed to go after and kill these people. We'll be back with more TNT Radio after this.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
My character Shazam knows all about growing up in a family full of teenage superheroes. They're bold.
Where's everyone going?
To fight crime.
Okay. Adventurous. Shazam! There's never a dull moment. And no matter what happens, they'll always have your back. All they need is a place to grow and be themselves. And the best part is, you don't have to be a superhero to adopt a teen. Learn more about adopting a teen from foster care. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward.
Clear and concise. This is the Jason Burma Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
Final segment with Stuart J. Hooper, and we have kind of moved over into the Israeli and Palestinian conflict, and I was discussing the fact that artificial intelligence has now been utilized to target the enemy. And, you know, whether this is Hamas or Hezbollah or the terrorists or Al-Qaeda or ISIS or even, quote unquote, an enemy combatant, I get extremely worried when we further put death and destruction and global warfare into the hands of AI electronic systems. So what were your thoughts about this revelation?
I think Israel has now officially denied that they're using this. Well, of course, they're going to do that, right? They're going to say, well, there's no way we would do that. Well, we could go through perhaps a little bit of history of all of this. Project Maven out of the Defense Department in the United States. This was an AI project that was involving Google. And Google employees eventually figured out precisely what it was that they were working on because the company's leadership had tried to hide it from them by doing various contracting setups using third-party developers and things like this. So it wasn't always technically Google workers that were doing it. And employees in Google actually revolted against this. And they said, we don't want to work on this. They issued a statement that said Google was based on don't be evil, do the right thing, do something positive for the planet, something positive for the world. If we're working with weapons technologies, they actually said in an open letter that, quote, Google will join the ranks of companies like Palantir, Raytheon, and General Dynamics. So the employees knew that just by getting into this software development process, they are going to be tied to the disastrous military-industrial complex players of old. Now, this Project Maven was described by Google's leadership then as, quote, specifically scoped to be for non-offensive purposes, and the technology is used to flag images for human review, and it's intended to save lives and save people from having to do tedious work. So all that the AI is really doing is going through hundreds of thousands of hours of video, hundreds of thousands, millions of photos, and it's just looking through them to try to save lives. Then Eric Schmidt, former head of Google, he would come out and say, quote, AI is a long-term technology that will be useful for defensive and perhaps offensive purposes as well. Well, welcome to the real world, everyone. Now we have our real first use of AI in a militaristic sense, and it's probably just killed over 30,000 people. This is the world that we now live in. So we've gone from 2018, this stuff being in development, some small-level political pushback from within Google, a little bit of pushback in the alternative media, not a whole lot, because of course Elon Musk has been turned into the alternative media's Christ figure, of course, so not too much critique of AI technologies as a result of all of that, but yeah, now here we are. Israel is using this, and God only knows what this system has been doing, because AI engineers don't actually really know how this sort of AI works. They themselves call it a black box. They don't know what it actually does. They know how to write the code so machine learning can start, but then they don't know how it's making the actual connections between all of the pieces of data that are put into it. So it's making these connections, it's spitting out these answers, and yeah, they probably are being, quote, reviewed by a human. It's probably some is a set of Israeli analysts sit around a desk and the computer spits out a list of, we think these are high profile targets, and they probably just look at it and say, sure, the computer said it is. Give it to the commanders, give it to the generals, go and drop some bombs. Here we are. This is the world where we currently are. Perhaps the only positive that we could pull from this is that at least there is still someone somewhere that has to confirm what the computer is saying, because eventually we're going to get to the point where the computer will just pull the trigger. And if you don't think that we're going to get there, you're again living in some fantasy land. Warfare is going to get faster and faster and faster and faster as a result of these technologies. How do you keep up with that? Let the computers make the decisions. That's the only way you can keep up with it. So this is a complete disaster. If it comes out that they have been using this system en masse, AI has just killed 30 plus thousand people with human approval. That's not to let the Israelis off the hook by any means, because again, they chose to use this system. If you're choosing to use it, you have to take responsibility for it. I also saw headline the other day that Tesla settled out of court now for someone that died on autopilot. Get ready to write a lot of checks, because that's going to happen again and again and again. More and more people are going to die, even with these pedestrian systems for self-driving cars. This stuff is a long, long way from perfection, but just diving headfirst into it, we saw what happened with nuclear weapons. Perhaps we're now seeing what's happening with AI.
And at the same time, the establishment continues to demonize human actions and behaviors, especially when you talk about car accidents, right? They always say it's a human error, a human mistake. Now, you talked about Maven. If I'm right, I believe that story came out 2017, 2018, and that was on the autonomous drones that they were writing code for. But again, it was such a classified project, they kind of had to figure it out. They were right in that letter. And not only did they write a letter, many of those employees walked out, many of which did not return and did not work there. That was something that was very underplayed in the mainstream media. And let's harken back again to the monologue in the very beginning with these establishment and quote unquote non-establishment conservatives alike. One of my hugest critique of somebody like Matt Gaetz is that I've seen him on the floor of our government complaining that Google acted treasonously when they refused to partake in this technology. You also mentioned a little guy named Eric Schmidt. Well, he's been with the National Security Council and the National Security Agency on a multitude of levels over the past decade plus, currently holds a position there. And I just posted a excerpt of one of his more long form interviews. I do have to watch the whole thing. I only watched this 10 minutes. But what is he talking about? Well, he's talking about AI. He's written several books on it. I have one of them around the corner, but he was actually talking about it in regards to his best friend who just recently passed, Stuart. You know who that is? Henry Kissinger. He named Henry Kissinger as his best friend. And the last project, which I believe is out there or on its way to being out there, was on artificial intelligence and modern warfare. So those are all things that we need to pay attention to. And you mentioned that, well, if this is AI, why aren't there more precision strikes? And I would postulate that it's because that AI doesn't really care about the civilian casualties. It may throw up a number, but there are no barriers as to whether or not that area will be attacked. And now Benjamin Netanyahu himself has come out and said that, yes, there will be an offensive in Rafah. On top of that, even on this program and others, you have a sect of people that are now saying there is no possibility for a two-state solution. Well, if there is no possibility for a two-state solution, Stuart, that is the end of Palestine. And the question then becomes, what happens to all 2 million of those people? Remember, you only told us 30 plus thousand were the bad guy. You're about, 1.97 million short right there, okay? So what does happen if that is the case? What is this attack on Rafah going to look like? And you also have conflicts on the border of Lebanon. Does Israel just plan on going into Lebanon as well?
Yeah, so with Lebanon, that's going to be a whole another kettle of fish. If they decide to go in that direction, that will be closer to a symmetrical conflict, and that will not be fun if you're an Israeli soldier, to say the least. One positive note before we get into the negative. There are let's say a small but growing number of young Israelis that are refusing military service. Now apparently you can refuse military service and not necessarily hear too much about it unless you start going public and saying, I am refusing to join the IDF and here's why. If you do that, then apparently they come after you and then they try to put you in jail. But there are apparently an increasing number of younger Israelis that are doing this. So if we want to have peace in the Middle East, it's time to move away from militarism generally, and maybe these people will be future Israeli leaders, and maybe they will be able to get the country on track. But for now, we're heading down the path of disaster. So what's happened? We had this attack in the north on Gaza City. The Israelis said, go south, you'll be safe. What do? They go in, Gaza City, destroyed, annihilated, practically nothing left. All of the infrastructure has been destroyed. Most of the buildings have been destroyed or damaged. If anyone stayed up there during all of this, the likelihood of them still being alive at this point is practically zero. I mean, no food, no aid, no water, no nothing. Then what happens? They start to move south, and then they go to Khan Yunis, one of these big southern cities in Gaza, where they said, go and you'll be safe, the Israelis, to the Palestinians. Go south, go to Khan Yunis, go to Rafah, and you'll be good. Well, what happens when they get there? A new front is opened in Khan Yunis, and Khan Yunis now stands in the same set of images as Gaza City. It's a pile of rubble. That's all that is now left. Complete disaster, devastation across the board. There is video coming out today, yesterday, last couple of days, of Palestinians finally being able to go back, because we had the big announcement, of course, that the Israelis are pulling out of Khan Yunis. And we're supposed to be really happy about that. This is great news. Yes, the war is going to come to an end. But wait a second. Netanyahu today, as you alluded to, said, we have set a date for the invasion of Rafah. So now they're going into the next largest city in Gaza, and they're probably going to do the exact same thing there. Level this, completely destroy it, wipe out the infrastructure, and kill tens of thousands of more people. And here we go again. Now, what is your solution then? Well, as you mentioned, clearly a two-state solution is off the table. There are multiple Israeli officials that have now said no two-state solution. The Israeli ambassador to the United Kingdom said no two-state solution. And when you think about it, there never could have been a two-state solution in the first place, because what does that mean? That means if you're going to have a state, you're going to have a government. What does a government have? A military. So the Israelis were never really going to allow this to happen in the first place. So what is their option? A single state solution. They want greater Israel. The West Bank and Gaza are going to be wiped off the map, and we're going to have greater Israel left, politically wiped off the map, maybe militarily wiped off the map. We shall see. What does that look like? Well, I don't know. Are you going to allow those 2 million Palestinians in Gaza, however many in the West Bank, to become Israeli citizens? I highly doubt it, because there were news stories before all of this chaos erupted last year that the right-wing Israeli government was already making it increasingly hard for Palestinians, Arabs, to get Israeli citizenship or to get rights to begin with prior to all of this chaos. Meaning that if you were an Arab and you married an Israeli woman or an Israeli man, and then you apply for permanent residence to the state of Israel, in many cases, Israel was denying these cases for seemingly no reason whatsoever, other than you're an Arab and we don't want you to be a citizen, because what does that give you? A vote. Now, if Israel gave all of these Arabs a vote, guess what that means for the Jewish state of Israel? It's probably not going to be Jewish for much longer. Which is also another key point when it comes to Israel more generally, which I haven't really heard brought up. Israel portrays itself as a democracy, but one of the key tenets of a democracy is the separation of church and state. You don't really see that in Israel. In fact, you see quite the opposite. So this is a disaster on a lot of levels. And in terms of where it goes, I have no idea, but nowhere good. Egypt doesn't want to take all of these people, because Egypt shouldn't have to take all of these people. They are where they are supposed to be. And even that's a stretch, right? You go back to 1945, 46, 47, 48, 49, the Nakba. Yeah, where they're supposed to be, even that's a stretch. So Egypt doesn't want to take them. Egypt shouldn't have to take them. The Arab world shouldn't have to take them. I don't know what you do. Israel's not going anywhere either, like we've discussed before, right? Israel is an entity. It exists. It's got millions of people. That they're not just going to magically disappear overnight. So learning to work together and doing that sooner rather than later, probably the only real solution here. Not going to happen while we're blowing each other up.
What happens with the Dome of the Rock? That's my next question. You know, if there is no two-state solution and all of this becomes greater Israel, you've already seen some of the religious zealots trying to push into prophecy the red heifer story that we saw in on CBS. It shocked me that was as mainline as it is, as archaic as it is. I mean, you're literally coupling modern day warfare with sacrificial prophecy of animals under a banner of 2024 while people are being killed by drone strike. So what do you see happening with that very, very religious and very, very contested site right in the middle of this conflict?
Again, nothing good. We've seen that the the Dome of the Rock, this has been the center of many political protests. It's been separated into these different regions. This is the Arab region, the Christian region, the Jewish region. And that hasn't really worked. In many occasions, the IDF has just crashed into there. Police forces have just crashed into there and pushed people out and pushed people around. Again, you just have to really ask the question, why are you doing that? What reaction do you expect that you're going to get? I don't know what the solution is there either, to be honest. I mean, you'd probably have to put that under, I don't know, almost kind of like how Washington, D.C. in the United States exists in this weird constitutional legal gray area where it's not a state, doesn't have members of the House, doesn't have senators, but it gets three votes in the presidential election. You need some kind of solution like that. But again, no one's going to agree on that. It would almost need to be governed from the outside. But then who's going to do that? Switzerland? I mean, that might be the only feasible choice.
No, they're not neutral anymore. We're now in a land where not even Switzerland could be neutral. They're expected to go to warfare. Stuart, let people know where they can find your stuff, brother.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Stuart J. Hooper. Just search me there. You'll find me putting out videos, analyzing this stuff on a couple of times a week. And yeah, trying to cut through all of this left-right crap and just get to the truth.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us. That's how you discuss the conflicts, not from a right or left perspective, from a reality perspective, and also one of a right and wrong morality. We'll be back with more of the show, second hour coming up, more TNT Radio after this.